Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Have you ever taken the time to imagine, really, what's involved in managing our wild places? Our public lands serve a myriad of uses, from hiking and camping, biking and kayaking, to grazing and drilling for oil and gas. How do those who have to balance the values and uses of our vast public lands think about and manage these competing uses? You just may be surprised to hear what they're talking about these days. We'll find out when your Voice of the Earth returns here on the Wildside News. Everyone knows about our national parks, Yellowstone, Redwoods, Canyonlands, the Everglades. And America's grand forests provide legendary recreational opportunities. But the majority of public lands, often not even recognized as such because they aren't necessarily marked with popularly recognized names, provide a wealth of resources to all of us, not least of which is almost unfettered recreational opportunities. We often hear about the places where competing uses overlap, where natural gas wells encroach on grazing, or where horsemen and hikers must share a trail. It's a daunting task to plan for proper use. It's been a long time in the making, and land use planning has a long legacy of changing strategies. Well, there's some new language appearing in the management manuals. These are some exciting times for those who have spent a lifetime finding the balance. Well, as all of my listeners know, the issues of public lands are very complex. There's been a lot of discussion about the future of public lands, the utilization, how best to use them, who owns them, how to administer them properly. One of the organizations that is very much involved, more than any other, in terms of administering public lands is the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management. We're looking for some good news from the BLM, and I think we found some really interesting new ideas that are emerging that I think people will find very interesting. And to help us understand more about this, we're talking with Don Bruns. He's a recreation planner who works out of the Colorado State Office up in Denver. Don, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thanks, Sydney.
How long have you been with the BLM?
Since the mid-70s.
So you have quite a history in terms of public lands and their uses, and your specialization is recreation?
Yes, it is.
How did you find yourself getting involved with recreation as your focus?
Well, it's a good question, Sydney. I'm a farm kid, grew up in the Midwest, and grew up with a history of asthma and realized I couldn't be a farmer, but was always interested in nature, and found out I could be healthy out in the West, and one thing led to another, and I got very interested personally as a participant, and found out that recreation enriched my life, and one thing led to another, and here I am.
Well, and of course, BLM offers extraordinary recreational opportunities. Why don't you just give us a quick overview of some of the opportunities that people have on public lands?
In terms of activities, we look pretty much the same as the other agencies, but that changes when we start looking at experiences and the kinds of benefits that people get out of their outings. Here in Colorado, for example, we have a lot of the state's major rivers, so there's lots of river recreation. There are lots of trails and undeveloped settings, so it's a chance for people to experience some of the Old West, as it were, get away from the rat race of the intensive recreation and have an opportunity to reconnect with culture and community. So there are chances to go on scenic drives, a lot of opportunities to see heritage tourism kinds of things with not just cultural and historic, but also natural features, which are part of our natural heritage. And, of course, the traditional hunting, fishing, bird watching, wildlife watching, but a lot of off-highway vehicle use, mountain biking, hiking, and of course, wilderness as well.
One of the challenges that I know BLM specifically faces, and that is very often you'll find communities right in the middle of your lands. And so there is this interface between communities and public lands, And I think that's where, in particular, this kind of new vision, a new approach to management, really comes into play. And this is something that is defined as benefits-based management, BBM, from the BLM. Give us a sense of what benefits-based management actually means.
Well, it's really managing for the value-added outcomes that recreation yields to our lives. It kind of goes back, Sydney, to the old days of really the birth of the recreation movement in the U.S. At that time, in the height of the industrial age, it was found that recreation could relieve some of the stress of working in an industrial setting for long hours. Recreation was something that improved one's quality of life and was therefore good. So recreation is something that enhances our quality of life. It gives us satisfying experiences psychologically, but it also improves our lives psychophysiologically as well as economically in terms of our own quality of life. It can improve our families, can improve our communities, can improve our economies, and hopefully improves the environment as well. At the same time, it can do the opposite. It can lead to disbenefits. So how we manage really determines the difference.
And what we're really saying is that public lands and lands and the opportunity to interface and get out there is an important part of our culture and our society.
That's exactly right, Sydney. Mm-hmm. It's that connection, like you said. BLM public lands are so closely interfaced with rural communities that to visit the rural West is to visit the public lands, is to visit those communities. And they really hitchhike one off of the other. So this is increasingly, for lots of folks, this is the chance to sort of reconnect with our rural roots. And particularly in the Intermountain West, the Rocky Mountain West, within the last decade, there's been a substantial in-migration, and that's not just, some of that's retirees, some of that is second homes, even business relocations. Why should people, we're hearing, beat their heads up against the wall of urban traffic when they could actually relocate and move their businesses out, and that's happening increasingly. So these are folks who also find out that the public lands are not just a nice place to visit, but it's nice to live nearby so you can have close-to-home access for enriching outings on the public land.
So in terms of benefits-based management, which is a new thing added to the land use planning manual for the BLM, just recently, as a matter of fact, this is the mandate is coming down to implement this. What is this bringing that's new to the process of land management that you think perhaps didn't exist before?
Well, we've always recognized the value of recreation, like I said, but I think that somewhere in the intervening 100 years since the recreation movement began, it became very easy to count, as it were, widgets, how many miles of trails we built, how many interpretive exhibits we put up, how many special designations, how many recreation sites we've built, how many areas we have, et cetera, on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But the real question is, so what? Why do all of this? So this really answers the why question. And the why really is the value that recreation potentially adds to the lives of individuals, to households and communities, to economies, and to the environment. And so benefits are really defined as satisfying experiences, as well as the improved conditions or the prevention of worse conditions to those different kinds of benefit recipients. So really what has happened is, in the old days where we wrote management objectives for getting things done, and now we're writing management objectives for the kinds of primary outputs, those recreation opportunities defined as activities, experiences and benefits, and then their attainment. It's that old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. So this is the whole point of this, is to try to decide what are the real products for what kinds of customers, because we can't be all things to all people and then work backwards.
Well, I'm trying to get a sense of how this actually becomes implemented then in the field. BLM has employees. They're now under this new mandate. For those people who are beginning to be trained and skilled in this new approach to the benefits-based management, What is their mandate? They go into a community associated with public lands. Tell me what they actually do.
Well, the mandate really hasn't changed in terms of what we've always been supposed to do in a multiple-use agency. We're managing for a variety of uses. Recreation is one of them, but what we're really doing now is trying to find out what is it that our customers want, to identify, really, markets, and to identify what kinds of outcomes, and specifically their preferences for activities, different kinds of recreation activities, different kinds of experiences, and different kinds of long-lasting benefits. And some of those outcomes are setting-dependent, so it's some are not. Some depend just on the actions of the providers, which, of course, BLM is not a sole-source provider, so particularly because we're an agency that so closely interface with rural communities, it's private business and industry that provides essential services, whether those be on-site, outfitters and guides, tour operators, or whether they be folks who provide retail services, equipment, gear rental, or even the entire hospitality industry, lodging, restaurants, whatever. And then local governments as well in terms of maintaining basic infrastructure, essential supporting infrastructure. So it's really a question of just hooking up with all of our constituents and finding out our customers and finding out just what it is that is valued. And, of course, you can't be all things to all people, so there's a question of doing analyses of supply and demand. I suppose in the old days we did those largely on the basis of activities, and now we're looking at what really matters to people, Sydney. What comes to mind is Leopold said at one time, the first rule of intelligent tinkering is to save all the pieces. And I guess that's what we're trying to do, make sure we address all those pieces that matter to our customers.
That's really great. Let's look at three scenarios. Let's talk about some small town in Utah where things are fairly dry and sparse. Let's talk about an area perhaps in Colorado where you have access to the high mountains. And perhaps someplace along a coastal area. Obviously, there's different needs, different benefits. How do you determine that? Do you go and sit in a restaurant and talk to people, or how do you gather that information from those local populations?
That's a great question. Really, there are several levels of doing that. It's surprising what we can find out by just doing informal interviews, sitting down and talking to, even in a recreational setting. I was on vacation up in Alaska this summer, and one of my colleagues up there said, we want to have you help us with a couple of seminars. And while I was out vacationing, I just did some informal interviews on my own and just found out really where people are coming from, who they are, where they're going, what are the alternative destinations, and what are they looking for. And of course, if we are thinking about that idea that Leopold espoused, saving all the pieces, then we're going to be asking different kinds of questions than we might otherwise have asked. And we'll ask questions like, so how did you plan your outing? What kinds of things matter to you? If these are vacationers, that's a different question than folks who are out for an evening ride on a mountain bike, for example. But those questions start, and of course, you know, if you ask people about their recreation outings, they'll love to tell you. And the information just starts pouring out, and you really find out how relevant this particular area is to some of the other alternative opportunities. That's kind of how we go about it, as we tie in, and this is new for most of us because we're, yes, we've done this before, but it's new in terms of making sure that we gather the right kinds of information and really find out to what degree these things matter, which kinds of outcomes matter. For different customers, and really in terms of your illustration, Sydney, it probably doesn't matter whether it's a remote community in Utah or if it's a high mountain community here in Colorado or if it's somewhere along the California coast. In one sense, the issues are the same. People are still looking to improve the quality of their life, find some stress relief, improve their health, improve family bonding, develop a closer relationship with nature, all these kinds of things. That's kind of how we go about it. And in some cases, we do focus groups, which are really small group meetings to just get a better idea specifically what are the dimensions that matter to people. And, you know, the old idea of a focus group was consensus building, and of course there needs to be, to some degree, we have to figure out which customers we're working with. But the genuine focus group, as Richard Kruger laid it out in his great book on focus group meetings, how to really do them and make them matter, it's really trying to identify the dimensions that are most important to our customers.
What I find interesting is there's some new languaging that's happening here in that we don't usually associate with land management. One of the terms that you used was family bonding. That's very interesting. That's an interesting discussion in terms of how to utilize land. Let's talk about that if we can, and maybe it's premature, but I'd be curious. So if you were to look at what we'll say, again, out in Utah, how would you go about trying to plan for improving the benefit of family bonding in an area like that?
Here's an illustration. We have the McInnis Canyons National Conservation Area, which is west of Grand Junction. We actually have a completed plan that is a benefits-based plan in that area. That's where Cocopelli's Trail starts out, and it goes down to Moab, Utah. It's probably a mountain biking mecca wouldn't be an inappropriate descriptor.
That's the center of it.
Yep. And so where people start out at Fruta, they go through an area called Mack Ridge, and then they go in into an area called Rabbit Valley, and then they cross over the state line, and they go all on into Utah. Years ago, when the Colorado Plateau Mountain Bike Association built those trails, working as volunteers with BLM, they basically said, BLM, don't you screw this up, because we really want, over here on Mack Ridge, we really want this to be single-track riding. We don't want the trails to be too well-developed, because the purpose here is for fitness riding, for developing our skills and abilities. In fact, it's an area that's close to town, so it's a chance for people to get out, burn off some steam, release some stress, get fit, and breathe in some of that beautiful outdoor air. That trail, as it goes west and across Salt Creek, then it comes along into some places where there's old, basically four-wheel drive routes, where now you can ride handlebar to handlebar, and now you have something like affiliation in improved relationship with one another. So here, a dad and a daughter, or a husband and wife, can ride handlebar to handlebar. Friends can, and talk about things. A completely different kind of riding. And I think it's one of my favorite illustrations of the difference between managing activity-based management and benefits-based management. And in the old days, it was the same thing. What are you managing for? Well, mountain biking. But here, it's mountain biking, but they're completely different activities because of the outcomes.
Very interesting. So the next question would be sort of, how does this actually then become implemented? How do you educate the public about these new benefits, and how they identify them for themselves, and then track that back into where they can, if they wish to do family bonding, for example? Will you have sort of like maps of areas where this is particularly relevant and possible?
Yeah, great question. A combination of things. On the one hand, what it means is that when we manage those areas, then we need to retain that setting. So part of the setting, the character of the setting, is that we don't overdevelop routes. We maintain the character of that setting, but so that's a question of managing the physical setting.
Mm-hmm.
Managing the social setting has to do with numbers of people. And if that's an issue for people, we need to address that. In this case, it's the administrative. It's the question of getting the information out about it. So, yes, we're not quite there in terms of implementation on that area, but we've been working with the local VCB, having discussions about that. How do we actually get the right word out? So it's really a question of here's another word we're not usually accustomed to, which is marketing. And it's not marketing as in selling more use, but it's marketing as in matching up people with the areas that have what they want. And it's really trying to facilitate getting people to the areas that can deliver the kinds of experiences and benefits they want. So it's a combination of things. It's how you manage, it's how you market, it's how you monitor, finding out are people getting what you said you would. And are we doing what we said we would do, and have we maintained that setting character? And then are all the administrative actions lined up to actually support those things rather than getting the cart before the horse. So it's pretty exciting, and it's pretty neat stuff because people definitely identify with it, and they go, yeah, that's right, that's what we really value.
These are the values. I need a little rest. I want to get out there. I want to pedal hard and just burn off some energy, and or just I just want a little time with my family. Right. Those are actually values to us. It certainly is a different way to approach land management. So let's say you're in a community and you become aware of this. How can they start to participate in this process of benefits-based management?
Well, we've always had public involvement processes, Sydney, for the development of our land use plans, and that process continues. For these areas, as we move over to doing this, it's just a question of becoming involved and letting our recreation field staff and managers know what matters, what's important. It's a question not just of the activities, but the kinds of things people want out of that, out of those activities. And it isn't just a question of participants. It's a question of what about the affected communities? What do they get out of that? There's the question of stabilization of local economies through the economic infusion that comes from recreation and tourism. But there's also the question of what are you doing to my community? Can we retain the quality of life that we want? And what about the land out there? What are we doing to the land? It harkens back to that old metaphor, the golden goose and the golden eggs. These things have to be held in balance, so it's a matter of targeting a balanced array of outcomes. So it's really getting involved with the planners, the managers, and letting their wishes be known. If people are interested, they could contact their recreation planners and managers in the field offices. They could contact my colleagues in each of the other states.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you give that the BLM website? It's real easy.
www.blm.gov, and you could just click on offices and centers, and you're off and running.
It would have been fun to have been in some of the planning sessions when these things were being discussed. One of the things I would find interesting, and if you can put this in layman's terms, it would be terrific, probably because this is somewhat, it's becoming bureaucratized now, there must be a master list of benefits.
There, in fact, is.
Yeah, and so just give us a sense, again, more in as close as you can in layman's terms, what are some of the benefits that, interestingly enough, are being discussed in these planning sessions for land management?
No, it's a great question. There is, if folks want to roll up their sleeves and get into this, they could go to the Venture Publishing website, and there's been several publications that have been put out that have some of this content in it. But in terms of just layman's language, for experiences, there's the old recreation experience preference scale that was developed by Dr. Bev Driver and Mike Manfredo up at CSU. There are things like developing your skills and abilities, enjoying risk-taking adventure, learning more about things here, enjoying getting away from family for a while, being near considerate people, enjoying feeling good about solitude, doing something creative, enjoying strenuous exercise, getting some needed physical exercise, and then, of course, there's the outcomes. There's the personal benefits, the psychophysiological, restoring my mind from unwanted stress, improving my mental well-being. There's the personal development and growth, things like improved sense of control over my life, improved leadership abilities, greater cognitive efficiency, more well-informed and responsible visitors, greater sense of responsibility for my own quality of life, and there's the whole personal appreciation and satisfaction, greater awareness of the importance of this place to my community, improved respect for the public lands or for private property, greater appreciation of the arts, greater sense of personal security, closer relationship with the natural world, and then there's the psychophysiological. The whole health thing, improved physical fitness and health maintenance, reduced incidence of disease, these kinds of things. And then there's, Sydney, we go into the household and community benefits. And these are things like reduced exposure to at-risk youth, improved community integration, enhanced lifestyle, increased nurturance or tolerance of others, heightened sense of community satisfaction, greater family bonding, improved parenting skills, more well-rounded childhood development. And then you get into the economic thing, reduced health maintenance costs, which matter to all of us, reduced absenteeism from work, improved local economic stability, greater local tourism revenue, and last but not least, the environmental benefits. Greater retention of the distinctive natural landscape features, reduced looting or vandalism of historic and prehistoric sites, greater protection of fish, wildlife, and plant habitat, greater recycling. The list goes on.
This is, quite honestly, and I'm being very sincere here, exciting to hear about, because what I sense happening, and it's great that it's happening now, couldn't happen at a better time, is for a real integration of the American spirit and land, and what's through this process of saying there is a relationship that exists between people and their land. In America, this is part of our great legacy through our public lands. And what I find really exciting is the fact that this is being formalized and defined and analyzed. And if I were king of the realm, what I would say is this needs to be integrated right into our schools so that school kids, from the time they're small, can start to think about these things in their backyard, the values that public lands have to them, so that they can integrate it from the time they're small and really get a sense of what America is about.
Oh, that's true, Sydney. And what's exciting for me about this is that, of course, when one makes their career out of this, you do this because you don't do this, I suppose, to get rich. You do this because you have a commitment to it, because it's a sense of trying to hook up people with the things that matter to them. And, of course, we all, as professionals, came to love this because we experienced it ourselves first. Now it's the opportunity to get past the machinery of just management to actually help enrich people's lives. And it's in meaningful ways, in ways that really matter, and in ways that allow us to be able to balance these things. Someone had the old commercial, "There are no simple solutions, only intelligent choices." That's really what this is about. It's about trying to structure things and then hold ourselves accountable to really give our customers what they want. And it isn't just something that psychocentric, or it isn't just anthropocentric. It's a question of maintaining our stewardship responsibilities for the land itself as well, and to communities.
Well, this is very exciting. Now, if people wanted to help you out in your efforts and the BLM's efforts in bringing about a benefits-based management into the future here, how can they help you guys?
Well, there are a variety of ways, but I suppose the first way would be just to get involved. In fact, that's one of the benefits we've identified is improved community involvement in land use decisions. As people understand what we're trying to do, it's an opportunity for them to really help us identify what matters to their community. In fact, what's interesting, Sydney, is if you ask people what matters to them, they love to tell you, but the question has to be asked in a way in which they're free to be able to explore and identify what really matters. There was a thing identified some time ago which was called the recreation demand hierarchy, and Bev Driver and some of the other researchers that really developed this, from whom we got all of this, recognized that there's a demand for activities, there's a demand for experiences, and there's a demand for benefits. People are more in touch with their demand and their preferences for activities than they are for those other outcomes. But it's those other outcomes that affect quality of life and one's health and personal well-being that matter most. So I guess what I would say is let us help the customers and let the customers help us try to find out what really matters, and try to make sure that we have those things in mind when we write our management plans. Help us to structure not only the character of the recreation settings, but all of our actions, and make sure they fit in. And then, of course, because we're not sole source providers, it's incumbent upon ourselves as well as the communities for us to get together and make sure that all of the key providers are working off the same page.
Here's what I'm going to encourage people to do who've heard this particular broadcast, and that is, first of all, remember the term. It's called benefits-based management. Okay, everybody together all over the world, now benefits-based management. Remember that term, because when you walk into your BLM office, and you say, "I heard about this benefits-based management. I think it's a great idea. What can we do? What are you guys doing, or how can we help you implement this? We have to take our sense of responsibility here, too, and let people know, particularly in government, that we really are in favor of this type of thing.
It's a good idea.
I'm so glad we've had a chance to learn more about this. We've been talking with Don Bruns, who is a recreation planner up in Colorado State Office of the BLM. Don, I want to thank you so much for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News. Any final thoughts?
Just thank you, Sydney. It's great to talk about this. I always appreciate talking with anyone who's interested in finding out actually how they can better hook up with what matters to them and help us find out ways in which we can actually be more responsive. So it's great. I've said several times I've had to work my whole career to get to Recreation 101 because this is it. This is really what matters to our customers. It's what matters in terms of taking care of the land and being responsive to our communities. So this is it's good stuff.
Don Bruns, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sydney.
Nature is in the news. As a matter of fact, nature is becoming the story, as it always really has been. We'll keep you informed of all the news you need to know to care for your land, your spirit, and our future as members of this globalizing new world. This is Sydney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next Thursday or any day on the archives when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News.